Hey everyone, welcome back to the Thrilogy podcast. My name's Cameron and I am here with my one co-host.
I'm Morgan.
So it's so weird tonight to not hear Krista say and Krista, but for the next couple of weeks, starting this week, Krista is going to be taking off from the Thrilogy podcast for maternity leave. So it is going to be just me and Morgan. But she is still going to be contributing cases and stories and research and keeping up with the socials and everything like that. It'll just be Morgan and I reading through her cases and kind of doing it together. So it's going to be different for the next couple months, realistically, but in a lot of ways, it'll be the exact same. So for today's podcast, it's going to be a little bit different. There was a case that I found online that I really wanted to cover and I really wanted to share, but there really isn't a lot of information. It's not like a big juicy case with a lot of details either. So I wanted to kind of cover the topic of national parks and crime that happens in national parks and kind of share some statistics with you guys. So the first thing that I wanted to share before I really dive into this case, because this case did take place in a national park in Wisconsin, but to kind of get started and give an idea, I think especially because with everything that's been in the news regarding like Gabby Petito's case and a lot of other cases, there's also another podcast that's called Park Predators that I really enjoy that's all about true crime that has taken place in national parks. I think we can sometimes get the idea that it feels like there are that there are a lot of different cases that happen in national parks. So I wanted to really look into those numbers and figure them out. So the most recent numbers I could find were actually from 2019. And in terms of new cases that have taken place, and this is really any sort of crime or criminal case that has taken place in a national park, in 2019, there were 146 new cases compared with 2018, where there were 119. So an increase there, but compared to 2017, there were 181. So it's actually lower. It was lower in 2019 than it was in 2017. Now, like I said, there were 146 total cases. To give you guys an idea of what types of cases these were, 59% of cases in national parks are crimes against people. 13% are property related crimes. 7.5% are, quote, crimes against society. Not 100% sure what that would mean. Morgan, do you have an idea? Crimes against society?
No, I'm not sure.
I have no idea what that might be. 7.5% are cultural resource crimes. 6% are natural resource crimes. 4% are drug-related crimes. And 3% is other. So obviously the large majority of cases that do take place in national parks are crimes against people. Now, within this crimes against people category, I'm not sure if this is... Yeah.
I just looked up what crimes against society is just quickly before we move on. So it's basically just like gambling, prostitution, and drugs. So things that are against people engaging in certain types of activity.
That makes sense. Okay. No, thank you for looking that up. That makes a lot more sense. But yeah, 59% are crimes against people, which I guess realistically, it doesn't necessarily have to be violent, right? It could be, I suppose, theft. That would fall into crimes against other people. So it's kind of vague in terms of what these actually mean in terms of the statistics that I found directly from the National Park Service. But nonetheless, I just wanted to kind of give a little insight into crime that does take place at national parks before we really dive into the different cases from today. Now, the other interesting thing too, and if you're a big true crime junkie and you kind of like these park related crimes, if you go to the National Park Service's website, they actually have an entire cold case section where they'll break down different cold cases that have taken place in national parks. Really super interesting. Definitely take a look. When I was kind of just briefly browsing through it, there were a lot of cases I had never heard of. So it's definitely worth taking a look at it, seeing if there's anything that you might be able to help with it. You know, it always kind of seems weird to think that we could help solve a potential cold case crime, but you never know. So take a look at that page if you ever get the opportunity. But otherwise, we'll get into today's case, which is a murder that actually took place in Devil's Lake. Devil's Lake is a national park. It's a really, really beautiful one. Morgan, you've actually been there with me. It's a really beautiful national park in kind of in central Wisconsin, right outside of Baraboo. And it's a park that I've been to a ton. Like I said, Morgan, you've been there with me as well. And from what I was able to kind of find when I was researching different resources for this case, sadly, there aren't a ton of juicy details or anything. There really aren't too many crimes that take place here. So definitely an anomaly. But about a year ago today, it was a year ago on October 14th. We're recording on October 22nd. So just a little bit over a year ago, there was a 24-year-old guy. His name was John Schmutzer. And he was actually stabbed to death in what was seemed to be in a random attack at Devil's Lake State Park. And still to this day, the case is not cold. It hasn't gone cold, but it's still unresolved. And authorities are still working to figure out who killed him. So obviously on the anniversary, the Sauk County Sheriff's Department kind of came out to just remind people of this case because they're still trying to figure out what has happened. There have actually been a total of 8 DNA samples that have been collected from potential persons of interest. And while some of those people have actually been ruled out, there are still some people who are under analysis and are being investigated. So definitely a weird crime to happen in this area in general, and also even crazier that nobody's been caught. But if you kind of think about it, though, at a national park, there aren't really any cameras. I mean, there are a lot of different trails that you could go off on. I mean, realistically speaking, it would be, I don't want to say easy to get away, but kind of easy to get away.
I do think related to that a little bit, we take for granted, you know, in the age we're in right now, having cameras around or having, you know, phones where we're easily traceable, and we kind of take it for granted. And we forget how easy it used to be to get away with crimes. And
that still kind of falls into national parks. Like, we're obvious. I mean, this is only a year old case, but even so, like, a national park isn't like the pinnacle of surveillance and cameras and technology.
Exactly. And we think that we have these things to kind of fall back on. It gives us like this false sense of security almost. But then, like you said, in national parks, there's, you know, limited surveillance there. Yeah. So,
well, and not only that, but I've said a couple times already, I've been to this park, and every time I've been there, it's super beautiful, like lots of really awesome hiking trails. But there is zero service. Like, your phone is not working in this place. And I think that same thing applies to most national parks. Like, national parks don't have huge cell phone towers in the middle of them, right? So even if you do go missing, I mean, if I tell a family member, hey, I'm going up to Devil's Lake for the day, and they don't necessarily hear from me that afternoon, that's not really a strange thing, right? Because again, people know, especially people in that area, know that phones aren't going to work well. They know that they're probably not going to be able to get in touch with you very easily. So it's like that prime window of finding who did this. I mean, now it's even harder because there was an opportunity for that person to get away. That person isn't able to get in touch with people as easily. So yeah, it is crazy to think that even in 2021, like, you know, being at a national park doesn't really mean a whole lot in terms of being connected.
Well, also, you know, going back to what I said about having that false sense of security, another part of that too, and I'm thinking back to when I was at Devil's Lake, like, it's a really popular spot. Mm-hmm. Like, there were tons of people there. So even though we didn't have service, like, it didn't have that kind of like eerie feeling of being in the middle of nowhere. Like, there were people around. Yeah. And like, even though, you know, we didn't see people for a couple of minutes, like, we would pass people on the trail, or even when we went to that swimming spot, like, people were there. So you almost feel like you're safe around people, but that's not always the case.
Yeah. And especially if you go alone, right? I mean, I think even like if I were to go alone, I would feel fine. Cause like you said, there are people, you know, you see people every couple minutes, or, you know, at most maybe 15, 20 minutes pass, especially if it's, you know, let's just say it's an off season or whatever. Obviously in October, it's starting to get a little bit cooler. There might not be as many people, but even so, like, I don't know, I don't feel like I've ever been afraid at any park I've gone to. Like, even other smaller national parks that don't have a ton of people. I've never been like, you know, kind of feel weird being here alone or being with just a small group of people. I think you're totally right. There really is that false sense of security, especially too. Again, you know, we have a phone in our pocket. Maybe we don't have service on it, but it makes us feel safe to some degree. So as part of the entire investigation, there have been more than 150 tips and leads that have been received. They've been investigated. They've done interviews. There's been more than 30 pieces of evidence that were sent to the state crime lab. And even some of those pieces of evidence a year later are still being analyzed. And even beyond that, there have been about 30 search warrants, subpoenas, and court orders that have been issued related to this case. All of that stuff, according to the lieutenant who's on this case, says that everything is still being analyzed. He even said, quote, "I cannot recall a day in this last year that this case was not discussed." So even despite all that, though, they're still not able to necessarily find the person who did this. He does, the lieutenant does believe, though, that he believes a break will come into the case, and that either through DNA technology or just somebody coming forward, they'll hopefully find an answer. Like I said, this isn't a cold case. This is something they're still actively looking into. But one thing that the lieutenant also did say is, quote, "By the purely technical aspect of this case, is it cold? Sure. We're not going to let it go cold. We're going to continue the follow-up. We're going to continue putting feelers out to the public just to keep pushing this investigation," unquote. So as part of the investigation as well, obviously, like any investigation, there are always things that law enforcement and police are not going to share with the public because they could be valuable pieces of information that help really figure out who did this, especially in the cases of false confessions and that sort of thing. But the lieutenant did share that there are more than a dozen witnesses that have all reported seeing the same man on that day. And the man has been kind of nicknamed the Runner. Now, they didn't necessarily see the Runner committing the crime, but they did see him in the general area at the time of the murder. Now, the quote, "Runner was wearing dark clothes, possibly a hoodie or a hat." Again, this is all based on witness testimony, with some sort of mask, ripped black pants, and he was last seen approaching the north shore of Devil's Lake on the East Bluff Trail. And that is where Schmutzer would eventually be found later. Some of the witnesses also did report that the person who was running frantically and even fell down multiple times, which is ultimately what made him stand out to potential witnesses. Now, overall, you might be asking, well, why was this guy attacked in the first place? Is there something that could have led to this? But investigators do truly believe that Schmutzer, the victim in this case, who was a Wauwatosa native, was attacked completely randomly and was really just blindsided as he was hiking alone. The lieutenant also went on to just further comment on this, and he said, quote, "There's no way to believe that this is a premeditated or targeted attack towards John," unquote. So, like I said, I don't have a ton more information on this case, but I do think that these smaller, more local cases that don't get as much press, that don't get as much attention, are equally as important. You never know who might be listening. You never know who might have a hint or an idea of who did this or lead to something that could lead to the person that did this. So if you do know any information and you are listening, you're more than welcome to call the Sauk County Crime Stoppers at 1-888-TIP-SAUK, and that's 1-888-847-7285. Otherwise, you can also text the word TIP SAUK, and SAUK is spelled S-A-U-K, and you can send that message to 274-637. So, interesting case nonetheless, one that really surprised me, and one I don't think I would normally cover a case this small with such little information. But again, it's been a year. It's a case that hits closer to home, and they still don't have an idea of who it could be. So again, you never know who might be listening.
So were there any hints as to why he was do they think it was a robbery, or is there any kind of hint as to what the motive was for this?
No, I mean, honestly, they just kind of think he was attacked randomly as he was hiking. He was hiking alone. It's something that he did. somewhat frequently. So they think that he was just randomly targeted, randomly attacked. Like the lieutenant said, that there's just really no way to believe that this was premeditated or targeted for any specific reason. And I feel like that's probably fair to say, like, after a year, if they haven't found any clues as to why this would be a premeditated or like a targeted attack, you know. So obviously this case was super, super short, and I didn't want to leave you guys with just national park crime statistics and a really short unsolved case. So I wanted to kind of throw in a couple little extras as me and Morgan adjust to this new this new format of just being the two of us. So the other two cases that were mentioned when I was looking up information about national parks and true crime at national parks, there were two super infamous cases, and I actually know of one. I've seen videos and heard of things of the second one that I'll share. I'll be curious if you know of either of these. But the first other case that I wanted to talk about was the double murder at Shenandoah. And this double murder is honestly one of the most infamous national park homicide cases. And now that I'm actually saying it out loud, I do believe I've heard a podcast about this specific case. This particular case involves the killings of Julianne Williams and Laura Winans. And they were found murdered at a campsite at Shenandoah National Park in Virginia on June 1st, 1996. So these two women, one of them who was 24, the other one who was 26 at the time, they were last seen hiking with a golden retriever. And that was on May 24th, 1996. So a couple months before their bodies were found. Their bodies were eventually discovered by searchers after the dog was spotted wandering alone on a hiking trail, which is kind of crazy that the dog was just kind of wandering for a couple of days and, you know, was fine. But according to the media reports at the time, they said that the two women had been tied up and that their throats had been slashed. Again, with these two extra cases, I'm not going to go into a ton of detail because these two cases, they're some of the most infamous national park cases out there. So there are a ton of resources and a lot of really good YouTube videos and podcast episodes about them. Again, if you haven't heard Park Predators, it's a really interesting and good podcast. But this case is also cold, and the FBI and National Park are still investigating these murders to this day. And then finally, this is the one that I know for sure I've seen content on before, and I think I would be surprised if you hadn't, Morgan. It is probably one of the more unusual unsolved disappearances at a national park, and it's the case of 8-year-old Samuel Bolke, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. He vanished on October 14th, 2006, and he was actually on a trip to Crater Lake National Park in Oregon with his father. The boy essentially just disappeared. And after a massive search was initiated, there was not a single trace of the boy ever found. So it's not even just like he was like kidnapped or anything, like zero trace, like just disappeared in the thin air. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children did later release an age progressed photo of what he might look like at 19 years old. But again, still to this day, nothing. And I think these cases, more so this particular case, the one of Samuel, are almost more interesting to me than the other ones. And it really goes back to what Krista always said, that the people who just vanish into thin air, like who was the person you were talking about, Morgan, the other day, or the last two weeks ago, was it Pamela? Was it Pamela?
Yeah, it was Pamela.
Yeah, she just disappeared. And like, those are the most interesting cases, because it's like, it's one thing to see, you know, you kind of have a trace of that person for a while, and then maybe that trace goes cold because, you know, it's distance or whatever the case might be, right? But people who just like seemingly disappear in the thin air, it's scary. Like, there's not really a better word for it. It's just like, what happened to them? Will we ever know what happened to them?
Especially for these cases, like these cases specifically that we're talking about this episode, where there's such little information.
Yeah.
Like, there's not even like hints or any sort of clues as to what could have happened. It's just disappearing into thin air, which is really unsettling.
Yeah, it really is. And I think this really does go back to what we were talking about at the very beginning of the episode, that national parks, not only are they super disconnected, there's no surveillance, Most of them don't have cell phone service or anything like that, but they're huge. Like, national parks are by and large very, very, very big. And so how do you possibly cover so much space? And so like, and know that you've looked in every nook and cranny, you know?
Well, that's what I was thinking when you said the Shenandoah National Park case, mm-hmm. or you mentioned it. Shenandoah Mountains range from Virginia to West Virginia. Like, it is a huge mountain range. Like, people, when you just talk about one specific, like, oh, the national park, like, you don't sometimes realize how big these areas are and how they're not developed.
Yeah.
So it would take a really long time to, and if it's even possible, to comb through that big of an area. So again, it's just really unsettling and something that we're not used to, like, this day and age.
Yeah. You know what one of my biggest fears are with, like, a national park? Like, can you imagine if you're at a national park and you, like, wandered off the trail on accident or something like that? You wander off the trail. And sometimes I feel like this is what happens in a lot of these cases too, which is even kind of sadder, scarier to think about. But can you imagine you wander off the trail? People realize you're missing, obviously. They start to come looking for you. But again, like I said, these national parks are huge. You cannot have eyes on every single part of the park at the same time. So can you imagine you are in a certain part of the park, they're looking at the other part, and then while they start to switch where they're looking, you somehow end up in where they've already looked. And you just completely pass each other.
That's like the whole thing. When you're a kid, they say to stay in the same spot. Like, I don't know how feasible that would be if you're, like, trying to find your way back. Like, realistically, I'd probably be walking around trying to find my way back.
Everybody would. Who's going to sit and just sit there? Like, I think, like, human, like, the human mind isn't going to, like, I don't know. You just don't want to sit there. You want to be like, okay, I'm going to try to find my way back. I can figure it out, right? We all have that, like, that fake sense of confidence. Like, oh, yeah, I can figure it out. I know where I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I would hope, though. I mean, yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. I would hope that they would have, like, dogs, at least, like, I don't know, trying to follow the trail. But yeah, no, that is scary to think about.
But then you also have to think about, like, even with dogs, like, these people who just go up and missing and nobody ever finds them. Like, where did their scent go? You know?
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
That's so true.
It's national parks are some of the coolest things out there, but they are genuinely some of the scariest things out there. And I think that's why I like that one podcast that focuses on national parks exclusively so much, because there's so much that's unknown, you know? This is kind of getting a little off topic and not as real, but did you see any of the American Horror Stories, like the American Horror Stories shorts, where every episode was different?
Not as real. We're going to TV show.
I ask because there's an episode where they go into a national park. They're looking for their son. And honestly, I think that episode might have been based on the case of Samuel, now that I think about it, because they took their son to a park and he just up and disappeared. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was inspired by that case. But they go to this national park. They hear word that there's been a sight of him or something like that. They go and they venture into the park, and there's like a tribe of cannibals, essentially, is what they are, just living in the park. And yeah, I won't tell you or anybody else any more of it, just in case you do want to watch that episode. But do you think, like, I don't know, in some of these really big national parks, especially like the mountain range that you were talking about, the Shenandoah mountain range, do you think that there could be, like, feral people living out there?
I don't know if I'd go that far. I do think, and I have heard of criminals or like people on the run, like escaping, or like not escaping, but being on the run and, you know, going to these like farther out places. What's that trail? There's like a really popular trail. But anyway, no, I have heard about you know, people on the run going and hiding out in some of these more remote places. So I don't think I would go as far as to say like there's people. Like yeah, or use those words, Cameron.
Or like maybe not even that, but like one thing that the episode did touch on as well that I could possibly see is people who are involved in like high level crime, you know, like,
well, that's what I'm saying.
Big time like drug people dealers that are on the run and, or yeah,
right, have something to run from and could potentially be really dangerous people.
Yeah.
Yeah, going on the run and hiding out because like you said, it's such big areas that couldn't possibly have eyes everywhere. So no, I've definitely heard of that. I don't think I'd yeah.
You don't think there are
groups of people?
You don't think there are like mountain men or children of the corn hanging out there just doing their own thing?
Not what you're describing.
Or like the other American Horror Story with the one family in Roanoke that they just are out separated from. I don't know. I don't know that it's such a crazy idea. I'll be honest with you. Like it does sound kind of crazy and kind of ludicrous when you think about it. But again, we don't have eyes out there. Like now this is a true crime episode turning into a conspiracy episode. I fully understand. Maybe that's what my next one will be is mountain men. But we don't have full eyes out there, you know? So would we really know if there are people living out there? Like if it was a small group of people and especially too if they've adapted over time. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting too far down the conspiracy.
I feel like I don't know. Stranger things have happened. I just think especially for these like – oh, it was the Appalachian Trail that I was thinking of.
Yeah.
I think. Like that's a really popular like hiking trail, but there's some parts that are like lesser traveled. Yeah. And that trail also people have said that criminals like hide out on.
Yeah.
But I mean stranger things have happened. Yeah, I don't think I believe there's just like communities of people like hiding out. But yeah, people do hide on these trails or at these places. So I don't know.
Huh. It'd be an interesting topic for one of us to cover. So if you guys ever hear an episode of me talking about mountain men, it's because I've absolutely completely run out of ideas for episodes and I am circling back. So with all of that said, this is going to be it for this week's episode. Thank you guys all for listening again and kind of dealing with some of the changes over the last couple of weeks with changing the format of how we do it and taking a little bit of a break. Krista being on maternity leave. There's a bunch of different things going on, but we're still going to be here every week, every Monday for you guys with a new episode. It'll just be me and Morgan. So I hope you like one of our voices because you don't got many other options for now. So, well, with that said, like I said, guys, you can find us on social media at Thrilogy Pod or make story requests on our website, thrilogypodcast.com.
As you guys know, each week we post two clues leading up to the release of our next episode. So the first clue is 'tis the season. So be sure to check out our Instagram for the second clue later this week.
And with that said, we will catch you guys next week for all things Thrilogy.